We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Powered by Insperity.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Docker and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps.
All right, ready to roll on a Saturday morning. Thanks to our friends at Insperity. Visit Insperity.com for powerful HR solution with exceptional follow-through. You can also get your questions in via Twitter at ESPN 97.5. Yours truly will be taking you through the hour as Charlie is up in Dublin, Ohio, at a funeral for the late, great Larry Dornish. We'll hear from Charlie at 8:15, talk about Dornish and a couple other topics, get to your questions as far as the world of golf. Dornish was the longtime head pro at Muirfield Village at Jack's Place, and that is a huge loss as far as the world of golf is concerned. So we'll hear with Charlie. We'll hear from Charlie around 8:15. We have a lot to do in the meantime, as there is 3 weeks remaining until the top 70 on the FedEx Cup money list begins the playoffs. The tour is in Blaine, Minnesota this week for the 3M Open, which we will get to. Taylor Pendrith, who already has one win this season, he's a 12-under leading the way, plus 240 odds going into the weekend. You've got, kind of a Houston favorite in Johnny Vegas sitting four back at 8-under. He's 18-1 heading into the weekend. A lot to get to with Vegas and his better play as of late. Vegas obviously came back from surgeries in two consecutive seasons in a row. And I think, collectively, in Houston, if you're rooting for a guy this weekend at 3M, it's got to be Johnny Vegas. So this week they're in the Twin Cities. You have the Olympics in Paris at Le National next week, where world number one Scottie Scheffler and Open champion Xander Schauffele will have a chance at gold. That is a massive event in the sense that it's golf's third year back at the Olympics in the modern era, and it's finally being played at a respected golf course in Le National, which holds the French Open every year and held the Ryder Cup a few years ago. I am fired up for the Olympics and looking forward to watching the Americans dominate in the coverage led by the great Mike Tirico of NBC Sports. I mean, the last three nights I rewatched the 1980 Winter Olympic semifinal between the USA and Soviets. I've rewatched Muhammad Ali lighting the torch in Atlanta in 94. And I rewatched Michael Phelps cleaning up shop in 2004 in Athens. So I am ready to go as far as the Olympics is concerned. And at 8:45, we'll bring in Tim Schmidt of USA Today to help preview what to expect next week in Paris. And then the PGA Tour will round out the regular season in North Carolina in 2 weeks at Sedgefield before the three-tournament playoff series. And with that, with the playoffs, you have the FedEx St. Jude at TPC Southwind. You have the BMW Championship at Castle Pines, which will be an absolute movie up in the altitude in Colorado. And as always, the tour will crescendo in Georgia at Eastlake for the Tour Championship. So still a ton of golf left, which is why I was shocked to see writers and critics start handing out the Player of the Year award after last week's Open Championship, which is where we'll begin today's program. Listen, Xander Schauffele has changed the script on his entire career in 4 months' time. Before 2024, before the majors of this year, Xander Schauffele looked like a 30-year-old who didn't have the chutzpah to get it done in the big moment at a major. He looked like the second coming of Lee Westwood or Colin Montgomery or Ricky Fowler, all class players unable to get the job done in the majors. And 4 months later, Xander Schauffele has two major championship wins and has cemented his place in the World Golf Hall of Fame. 9 PGA Tour wins, a Wanamaker Trophy, a Claret Jug, and a gold medal from the 2019 Olympics. Yeah, that's plenty good enough for golf's Hall of Fame at just 30 years old for Xander. And what he did last Sunday with that closing 9-31 at Royal Troon was nothing short of one of the greatest closing nines in Open history as Schauffele stormed past Billy Horschel and stormed past Thurston Lawrence. Here's more from Schauffele on his experience from last Sunday.
It was hard. It was very difficult. I think winning the first one helped me a lot today on the back nine. I had some feeling of calmness come through, and it was very helpful on what has been one of the hardest back nines I've ever played in a tournament. So it's a dream come true to win two majors in 1 year. Is, you know, it took me forever just to win one, and to have two now is something else.
And forget the back 9-31 at Troon. How about the fact that Xander Schauffele became the second man in history, only behind Jack Nicklaus, to close out two major wins with Sunday 65s? And how about the fact that Xander got it done in the same year? Two Sunday 65s to win a major. He had the closing round 65 at Valhalla to win the PGA, and he closed out things at Troon last Sunday with a 65. That takes some serious chops, and I find that piece of history more impressive than the fact that Schauffele became the fourth man ever to win the PGA and Open in the same year. And clearly, the key to Schauffele's consistency this year is the ability to keep his composure. Here was Schauffele after the Open on how he never loses his cool on the links.
I'm not sure. You know, I think a long time ago, I just kept tracking my rounds where I got angry and truly deep down angry. And I just, my mistakes started compounding, and, you know, I really can't tell you, you know, I get angry, but to me, it's all about the next shot. I know it's cliche and people try to talk about it, but you really can make yourself happy if you try and hit a good shot as your next one versus just snowballing the wrong way. So I really, you know, easier said than done, of course. But I mean, I've never broken a club, but, you know, I've gotten pretty pissed off on property. You can probably ask Austin. He's like an elephant. He keeps track of all these things in his mind. You know, everyone in my family knows how competitive I am. You know, I may not be the guy running around fist pumping, but that's just who I am. You know, I kind of know how I need to be to perform at a high level. And the same way I don't get really angry, I also don't let myself get too over the moon, just because it's the same thing. You know, if I'm sitting there snapping a club, that'd be the same thing as me running around fist pumping. It would take too long for me to adjust before my next shot to hit a good one. So, you know, I've kind of embraced this sort of SoCal laid back kid, but there's obviously a fire burning deep within, or you wouldn't have a couple majors sitting by your side.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So much to unpack there from world number two. But the bottom line is there is no one better at displaying the growth mindset on the golf course than Xander Schauffele. I enjoy some of the more boring personalities like Xander Schauffele and, you know, maybe even Zach Johnson in his prime, and maybe more of a newer name like Ludvig Åberg. Those three names, they go about their business. And that's who we as weekend golfers need to be learning from. I watch way too many 15 handicappers basically throw away their rounds because they can't regroup after one bad golf shot. And what you'll learn from Schauffele is that a zen mentality on the golf course works way better than having your heart rate skyrocket and throw you off your tempo because you can't get over a drive you hit 30 yards out of bounds four holes ago. And the reason so many have a tough time doing that is because the mental outliers of the game are the most intriguing players to watch. Junior golfers have no interest behaving like Xander Schauffele or Zach Johnson. You grow up watching videos of Tiger Woods cussing himself out before sticking a four iron to a foot at Torrey Pines. You watch the tapes of Bryson DeChambeau nearly driving the green at number five at Bay Hill and getting fired up, raising the roof off Bay Hill. You watch Jordan Spieth rambling his thoughts to Michael Greller. It's very easy to think that's the right way to go about the mental side of golf. But they are outliers, and 9 out of 10 of you are better off working on what Xander does and practicing how to forget about the previous shot the moment it leaves the club face. Now, Xander Schauffele's composed mindset is great learning for you and me. The sad part is it's not what the golf fan wants to watch as the Open had its lowest ratings in over 10 years, because the average fan would rather watch Bryson DeChambeau, Rory McIlroy, or Tiger Woods get the crowds fired up, and they all missed a cut last week. All in all, though, PGA Tour ratings, I would say, are in a good spot through 30 weeks of the season, as it was the first time Americans swept the majors since 1982. Amazing it had been that long since the United States totally dominated the majors. That year, that was Craig Stadler winning the Masters, Tom Watson won the U.S. Open and British in 82, and then Raymond Floyd won the PGA that year. 42 years later, it's Scottie Scheffler, Brooks Koepka, and Xander Schauffele who are the reigning champions going into 2025. And, you know, amateur golf in the States, you know, talking about the way it's grown this year and the popularity of golf this year, you know, amateur golf in the States could not be in a better place with 3.1 million new recreational golfers in 2024. And speaking of amateur golf, we'll get to Brently Roman of NBC Sports here at 8:30. He's been live from the U.S. Amateur all week at Oakland Hills, where Charlie Woods made his debut at a U.S. Junior. You know, Charlie Woods did not make it to stroke play, but the crowds out there were out of control for him. If you go watch the videos, the crowds for the son of Tiger Woods were out of control at the U.S. Junior. So we're going to get a feel on how to set these expectations for Charlie Woods, who's only 15, here at 8:30 with Brently Roman. And you can catch the final of the U.S. Junior at Oakland Hills at 1 o'clock. The first 18 of that are about to start. It's Trevor Gucheski and Tyler Watts facing off. Gucheski is the son of PGA Tour member Scott Gucheski. Gucheski took out the number one ranked junior in Blades Brown in the first round of match play, so he is rolling. And then Tyler Watts is a crucial part of the United States developmental junior team. So you'll be able to watch the final at 1 p.m. Central on Golf Channel prior to the 3M Open coverage. So we'll get Romine in here a little later on to give us a preview. And then, of course, stick around for Tim Schmidt at 8:45, because we're going to get a little preview for the Open. Before we cut to break, I'm talking and saying a brief word quickly for my friends over at Insperity. Hey, business owners, have you ever felt like the walls are closing in, that the obstacles growing your business are overwhelming? We all know running a business comes with pressure, remote workforces, HR compliance, keeping your top employees. There is no wonder you business owners start feeling boxed in, but you don't have to do it alone. Fortunately, there's Insperity. They put 30-plus years of experience to work helping you with your human resources, from hiring and training to HR admin and compliance. Add in competitive benefit options for your employees, and you've expanded your HR capabilities. With Insperity lightening your HR load, you can focus on growing your business surrounded by employees who are empowered to be their best. Don't let the obstacles keep you from realizing your full potential. Get the relief you need from an HR company that puts you and your employees on a path to success. Because with Insperity, nothing seems impossible. We'll get to some listener questions on the other side with Charlie Epps. Once again, stick around, 8:30. Brently Roman of NBC Sports joins us. And then at 8:45, Tim Schmidt from Golf Week will join us. A ton to do as far as the world of golf. Don't go anywhere. This is Charlie Epps Golf Hour. It's my Insperity HR that makes a difference.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
The Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity, continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor and Charlie Epps.
Nice to have you aboard on a Saturday morning. We'll get to Charlie Epps here in just a minute as we continue as far as the world of golf is concerned. This week you had a ton of writers and talking heads go ahead and crown Open champion Xander Schauffele as the 2024 Player of the Year. And Those were tough takes for me to listen to, considering we had the Olympics and three playoff events left on the schedule. Clearly, world number one Scottie Scheffler has been the player of the year up to this point with six total wins on the season. He's ahead of Schauffele by 1,900 points on the FedEx Cup standings, even after Schauffele's win at Troon, and the money list speaks for itself. Over the long haul of the PGA Tour season, Scottie Scheffler has been the better player, and once again, the season-long points list will tell you the same thing. Numbers talk. Now, in my mind, Xander Schauffele defending gold in Paris next week would take the amount of wins and the amount of FedEx Cup points out of the conversation. If Xander Schauffele holds the Wanamaker, the Claret Jug, and defends his gold in the same season, that would resonate much stronger in the average fan's mind than Scheffler's six wins. If Xander wins gold next week in Paris, I believe Scottie Scheffler will have to sweep the playoffs. That's right, win all three playoff events in order to get the Player of the Year vote. I know that sounds ridiculous, but nothing less than nine wins in a season is going to resonate in the average fan's mind over Xander's PGA, Open, and a potential gold in the same season. You and me understand how special it is that Scheffler became the first man to six in a season since Tiger in 2007. But nine is the magic number that has only been reached in a single season by two men since 2000, Tiger Woods and Vijay Singh. And the fact is, history doesn't care about six wins in a season, it doesn't care about seven, and it doesn't care about eight. But nine is that magic number. Now, the same is true if Scheffler wins gold. That would get him to seven wins on the season with a green jacket and gold medal. That would seal Player of the Year for Scheffler. And it would be silly of me to sit here and say I know for sure that the gold medal next week will come down to world number one and world number two when you have 55 to 60 other players in the field. Rory McIlroy, Ludvig Åberg, Jon Rahm, Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland. We'll get to the odds for next week, but this is a major championship field we're talking about for the Olympics next week. So the odds of gold coming down to Scheffler and Schauffele are very slim. But then you hear Schauffele is the only player in the world to finish top 10 in every major this year, and you think about Scheffler's winning percentage this year, and you start to think, why wouldn't it come down to world number one and world number two next week? I've just been notified by the great producer, Austin Rodriguez, that we have Charlie Epps on the line from Dublin, Ohio. Charlie, I told listeners at the start of the show about the world about the world of golf losing a giant in Larry Dornish, the great head pro of Muirfield Village. That's where you join us from. How are things, Coach?
You know, they're wonderful but sad. But yes, Larry was a special person, like a lot of club pros. But he had an important, you know, assignment. He took care of Jack Nicklaus's golf club and Barbara Nicklaus, and he did a wonderful job, and he was so creative, had such a great laugh. But unfortunately, the C-word, cancer, got him, and I'm going to miss him a lot. He was one of my best friends, and but life goes on.
Well, you know, Mr. Dornish is looking down at the work you're doing with CanCare, an incredible cancer foundation, the work you're doing with the Charlie Epps Scholarship, you know Mr. Dornish is looking down on that and very proud of you, Charlie. One question before we move on to some listeners. How does one become the head golf professional at Jack Nicklaus's most cherished club?
Well, you have a reputation within the community that you've been a great golf pro at a club in Florida right next to Jack Nicklaus's home, and Jack was able to see Larry in work and in play, and they became good friends, and so Jack had a lot of trust in him from the beginning. He knew his record as a club pro, and he grew up in the game, and so it made a good combination.
Let's get to, well, once again, rest in peace, Mr. Larry Dornish, former head pro Muirfield Village Golf Club, the most cherished club of Jack Nicklaus. We will remember him forever, Charlie. Let's get to some listener questions. We go to Tiago in Cordoba. Charlie, your student Angel Cabrera is tied for sixth heading into the weekend at the Senior Open at Carnoustie. You predicted he would win a senior major soon. What's been the key to Angel's consistency?
Well, he's really worked hard to get back to his game after what he's been through on a personal level. And he finished third 1 year at Carnoustie in the British Open. So his history in playing overseas is really good. That's where he started his career on the European Tour. And he's played all those courses. And he's shown this coming back that he's strong. And each day he gets a little sharper and sharper with his short game.
Angel, he's five back heading into the weekend at the Senior Open, but you look up this leaderboard, there's not too many players ahead of him with major championship-winning experience. KJ Choi, incredible player, never won a major. He's at 6-under, winning at Carnoustie by two. Padraig Harrington's the one probably you have to worry about. He's at 3-under, three back of Choi. Padraig, we know he can get it done in the big moment. But other than that, Cabrera, he's got a pretty open road to the top if he gets that putter going this weekend. We'll keep an eye on that. Let's get to question number two here, Charlie. This comes from Luke in Toledo. Charlie, I'm a caddy, and I have a tough time getting members to forget about a bad shot they hit. Xander Schauffele talked a lot about keeping his cool all the time last week, and I'm wondering how you approach the mental side of the game with your students.
Well, you gotta tell them that there's no whining in golf. You can have a little glass of wine when you get done and talk it over. But, the reality is in golf, you're going to hit more bad shots than good shots, especially being an amateur. And you just gotta take them with a grain of salt and go back and get through your pre-shot routine and try to make the best shot that you've hit in your life and so on and so forth. And then your body will relax and you'll get the tension out of the game. Anger brings tension, and tension brings problems in a golf swing. So keep your mind cool, relax, and have a glass of wine afterwards and kind of laugh at yourself for hitting such a dumb shot.
Incredible. The golf doctor turning water into wine here on a Saturday morning. Let's get one more question in for you, Charlie. This comes from Andy in the Heights. Charlie, I'm here in Houston and haven't been able to play golf in 4 weeks because of this rain. How do you keep your game sharp when you're unable to get on the golf course for this long?
Well, Jack Nicklaus always had an interesting saying. He says, be realistic with your expectations. And after what we've suffered through, this weather in Houston has been horrible all year long, you just got to take it with a grain of salt. Go, you might, hit some balls a little more, but accept that. And don't expect too much. Lower your expectations and be realistic. Hey, okay, we haven't been able to play. We haven't been able to practice. So those things aren't good combinations for playing good golf. So be patient and let's have a good fall season and you'll get your game back.
Charlie, we appreciate you spending a couple minutes with us here on a Saturday morning, even though you're, mourning the good friend, the late, great Larry Dornish. You're at his funeral in Dublin, Ohio. We hope you have a great rest of the weekend and can't wait to see you back in studio next week.
Okay, you have a good show.
All right, Charlie, talk soon. That is Charlie
Bye-bye.
Epps, the great coach of Angel Cabrera, who, Angel eyeing his, third career major in the eye going into the weekend at Carnoustie. I am fired up to watch that and then the Senior Open. Hopefully him and Padraig Harrington get into a little bit of a battle. So great to hear from Charlie there. I've got one more thing to discuss this segment before, we bring in Brently Romine the next segment. Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood, well, let me give you a little background on this. LIV Golf is in the United Kingdom this week. John Rahm leads at 8-under, Andy Ogletree 6-under. LIV Golf, as I've told you over and over, not the greatest TV product. No one watches the CW network. It's a joke of a channel. But, all this whole time,
I have said that if these teams can connect with the geographic location, you know, there's a lot of promise, a lot of fan popularity that could come out of that. Here's Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter speaking on that before Live UK this weekend.
Yeah, we've been talking about that, and, you know, it's at a very early stage, but certainly it's something that I think we should look at in the future and certainly consider, yeah, very, very seriously. I think it makes perfect sense to have home courses and for every team and use those venues. And then when the tournament isn't there, you can use it for other, you know, purposes. You know, we could bring, just thinking out loud now, we could bring little sticks to it for certain weeks of the year. And, you know, you have ladies tournaments there and girls tournaments, other junior tournaments. So, yeah, there's infinite possibilities.
Yeah, look, we've spoke about it, but, you know, it comes down to finance at the end of the day. If we deliver on the golf course and win five tournaments next year, we can push this forward a bit quicker. So, you know, I think every team has been tasked with a go-forward plan. What does 3, 5, 10 years look like? And it's definitely in that window of, you know, don't think small, think big. So, you know, we're sitting here trying to think big and how big we can take this Majestics GC franchise. And, yeah, a home venue would be amazing. We need a location. We need some funding. And obviously, if we play really well, then it'll be there.
So Westwood can save it on the fact that this is going to help the, you know, ladies game and the junior game. Clearly, that's, you know, typical Live Golf PR. But I'm in full agreement. It's a rare agreement with the fact that home courses or a hometown, at the very least, connecting these teams, the Crushers and the Aces, with the city would go a long way for Live Golf. Now, the PGA Tour is technically one step ahead of them in this realm. They've got the TGL starting up in 2025, which is going to be every Tuesday night on ESPN National. And it is indoor simulation, state-of-the-art technology, something we've never seen before. But all the teams are connected to a city. And you think about sports, you know, NFL, NBA, NFL, NBA, MLB. There's not a team sport that doesn't have a connection to a geographic location. So, you know, from the start, everyone's been making fun of these Live Golf names, Aces, Crushers, Torque. To me, the most successful marketed team is Team Torque, because you've got Joaquin Niemann, Carlos Ortiz, Mito Pereira, Sebastian Munoz, all from the Latin America region. And you could feel the fans around them because all four of them have the exact same fan base. I think attaching Live Golf teams to home courses or a home location would be a great start. To take that product from a joke to maybe average. That's what I'm saying here. On the other side, we'll get to Brently Romine of NBC Sports, talk about the U.S. Junior Amateur. That's some real competition there, because the U.S. Junior Amateur winner gets an exemption into the 2025 U.S. Open. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, presented by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. Back after this.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Powered by Insperity.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps.
Keeping you up to date as far as the world of golf is concerned on ESPN 97.5 Houston. And today at 1 p.m., you can watch the U.S. Junior Amateur Final on, I believe it's Golf Channel. And we're going to have Brently Romine in here of NBC Sports in a few seconds, live from Oakland Hills. But Trevor Gucheski is one up through 10 holes on Tyler Watts. As we talked about in the opener, Gucheski is the son of the great Corn Ferry Tour and now PGA Tour member Scott Gucheski. What a run Gutchesky's had. He took down Blades Brown early on in match play, and he's facing off against Tyler Watts, who's part of the promising U.S. junior developmental team. We now go to the Progressive guest line and welcome in Brintley Romine of NBC Sports. Brintley, great to have you aboard here on a Saturday morning. Thank you for taking the time. What a venue in Oakland Hills. I mean, you talk about past champions as far as U.S. Open and Senior Opens, Andy North, Jack Nicklaus, Patty Harrington, Europe winning the Ryder Cup in 2004. How has Oakland Hills responded to hosting the U.S. Junior this year?
You know, they're still working on the clubhouse. Well, first off, thanks for having me. Excited to talk some junior golf. But, yeah, so they're still working on the clubhouse. Obviously, they had that devastating fire a couple years ago. But the golf course, I mean, I was there in 2016, and it looks completely different. There's a lot fewer trees, and I think it really does a good job of showcasing kind of the entire property. And, truly, in my opinion, one of the best venues that the USGA has historically gone to. And I'll tell you what, it's tough, but, as we saw with the 12th hole yesterday, I mean, you have to hit it in the right spot. And if you don't, your ball's rolling back down 100 yards and giving you a little wedge contest there. So, I couldn't say enough great things about the course.
How do these young players respond to the pressure with a U.S. Open exemption on the line? What was the feeling around Trevor Gutchesky and Tyler Watts and maybe even their families with 36 holes to play?
Well, it was funny, Will, because I was laughing yesterday after the semifinals. I mean, here we have two great players who have a chance to win the U.S. Junior tomorrow, and they're just so serious. You know, they're so locked in, and I'm like, man, just smile. Like, kind of enjoy it. And, you know, deep down they are, but, I mean, these are two competitors who are treating this like a U.S. Open. I mean, we've talked about it, and we've seen it on the PGA Tour. Great golf just keeps getting younger. And, you know, these guys believe that in just a few years, they could go out and win on the PGA Tour like a Nick Dunlap, who won the U.S. Junior in 2021. So it's all business right now. And, if you look at the rankings, if you follow junior golf, I mean, these are two guys who shouldn't be a surprise to be in this position.
How do you react to the Charlie Woods and Tiger Woods madness this week? You know, Charlie qualified for his first junior at 15 and didn't make it to match play, but had a commendable effort. How were the crowds, and what were your takeaways from watching Charlie Woods?
Yeah, it's such a complicated issue, right? And I talked about this a little bit earlier this week on Golf Central, but there's kind of a fine line between, I think, what's acceptable in kind of the coverage and the way we treat Charlie to what's not. And I think you can kind of put it in a couple buckets. One is the coverage, stories you're talking about them on the radio or TV or things like that. I think there is a general and a fair interest in him being Tiger's kid. You know, the first time that he does something, it's news, like qualify for the USGA championship. That's something that is a huge deal. His first round in a USGA championship that his dad won three times, that's a big deal. But when you have news outlets, whether it be local or even national this week, send people out just to cover Charlie Woods, and then by Wednesday, they're nowhere to be found on property. I mean, I went, actually was curious, and I went and did a quick Google search. Only Golf Channel, Golf Week, and the Detroit News has written about someone other than Charlie Woods this week. And to me, that's where things, get over the line to where, all right, like, this is just kind of ridiculous. And then the second thing is the crowds. You kind of alluded to that earlier. A USGA championship's a little bit different, right, than going to follow him at a qualifier or a high school tournament. The high school tournaments, I think, should be off limits. If you're not a friend or if you don't have a little kid with you, I don't think you should be able to watch high school golf. That said, USGA championships, a little bit different story. If you take away the people who are there just to try to get a glimpse of Tiger, then I think it's maybe more acceptable. But the autograph asking, the just kind of the stuff that we've seen over this past year, or two, I think it's a little bit out of hand. So, yeah, a fine line that I think probably more than half the people are maybe going a little bit over.
We've got Brantley Romine of NBC Sports joining us live from the U.S. Junior Final at Oakland Hills. Brantley, you know, you cover a ton of college golf and junior golf for NBC Sports, and I think this question is beyond Charlie Woods, but if now is maybe not the appropriate time, you know, for coverage of that extent, and I think this is more of a general question as the pro golfer coming out of college, Luke Clanton, some of those guys, that age is getting younger. What is the appropriate age to start setting expectations for a Miles Russell or a Charlie Woods? How do you go about that?
Yeah, it's so tough because it's the best golfers now at 15, 16 years old might not be the best golfers at 18 or 19. And we see that a lot. I mean, you look at just this field and Henry Gwan, he's still a great player, but 3-4 years ago, he was by far the best player in that class of 2026. Now, you know, the likes of like Luke Colton, Blades Brown, they've passed him by. But, you know, so much can happen in these few years. I think it's fair for someone like Miles Russell, right, who has achieved so much in such a little bit of time. It's fair to give him the hype. It's fair to give Blades Brown the hype when he finishes T26. But then on the flip side, I think, you know, players who aren't quite there yet right now might be the best players 3-4 years from now. So I think there is still time for Charlie Woods to develop. And so it's unfair when people look at the 82 and the 80 and the fact that he beat just a dozen or so players out of 262. I think it's unfair to say that he stinks, he's never going to be good, because I look back to 2016 when I covered the USAM at this very course. Curtis Luck, a young kid from Australia who was 18 at the time, his dad told us a story after he won that week of his first junior tournament that he ever played, 18 holes. He was 12 years old. He actually got paired with Minji Lee, who now plays on the LPGA Tour, major champion, all that. He was 12 years old, so only 3 years younger than Charlie. He shot 116.
Wow.
And he ended up making it to the PGA Tour. He was a U.S. amateur champion. So Charlie, right now, I think the projection and talking to people who kind of know the recruiting side of things and coaches and things like that, like he is a Division I talent right now. He's got the speed. He's got the IQ, the pedigree. It's just a matter of getting more experience. And you only do that by throwing yourself in the fire and qualifying for a U.S. Junior and things like that. So I do expect Charlie to get a lot better, and I expect him to play Division I golf.
Brantley, we haven't seen a stroke play medalist win the U.S. Junior since Jordan Spieth in 2009, and it was a huge shocker to see the stroke play winner Blades Brown lose very on in match play this week. Blades Brown is a name that I'm hearing in conversations to be on U.S. national teams. You know, an example is the Spirit International in November. There's a lot of interest to have Blades on the U.S. team. Even though his WAGR maybe doesn't reflect how good of a player he is, he certainly made a huge step on the, you know, junior golf scene. I think he just went to high school from home schedule. So, you know, kind of taking the Nelly Korda route to some extent. But back to the question, not to run on, what do you think the reason is for these stroke play medalists not getting it done at the U.S. Junior?
It's two words, match play. It's such a fickle format. And if you look at all the USGA amateur championships that decide their champion by match play, or you look at the, you know, match play history on the PGA Tour, like the best golfer usually does not win. NCAA championship, same thing. Like, it's just so hard, and you can have a bad day and you're playing against someone who is playing great golf as well. And so the chances that two guys have a bad day is not that great. And, you know, lo and behold, he runs into Trevor Kachewski, who finds himself in the final. And so I don't think it's as an indictment on Blades, maybe not playing well, as just the fact that, you know, match play's tough, and it's tough to win six matches after playing 36 holes of stroke play. There's a lot of pressure on you. I think that is a real aspect of it, to have that one next to your name, to be able to do something too, and him being also a U.S. amateur medalist last year to join Tiger and Bobby Clampett as the only players to do that. It's hard to live up to those expectations sometimes. And, you know, Blades just got beat. And he'll be back, and he'll have plenty more chances to win this tournament.
Brindley, we appreciate your time so much. The game of professional golf is changing so much with the, you know, the prime age getting younger, and players like Miles Russell, Blades Brown, Luke Clayton coming on the scene very early. Always great to hear your insight as far as college and junior golf is concerned. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Have a good one.
That is Brindley Romine from Oakland Hills. Once again, you can catch the U.S. Junior Final on Golf Channel at 1 o'clock. And once again, the winner of the U.S. Junior between Trevor Gutchewski and Tyler Watts, they'll receive an exemption to the 2025 U.S. Open. So no games being played. Big-time event. 1 o'clock on Golf Channel. On the other side, we'll bring in Tim Schmidt of USA Today, get a little preview of the Olympics, go back over the Open, talk about the Player of the Year Award. A lot to do. One segment to go. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, presented by Insperity, HR that makes a difference.
ESPN 97.5.
The Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity, continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Will Doctor and Charlie Epps.
One more segment to go here on ESPN 97.5 Houston, and it's going to be the best one because we now go to the Progressive Guest Line. Welcome in Tim Schmidt of USA Today and Golf Week. Tim, great to have you aboard. Always great to hear your voice.
Always great to talk to you, Will. I love the fact that I've now become kind of a tag team partner with Brindley Romine. I feel like the last two or three times I've been on the show, it follows the vast knowledge, amateur especially, of Brindley Romine, a former Golf Weeker, by the way. So I always love to hear that he's on just before me.
Excellent voice, Tim. I got Brindley on in the segment before you to cover the junior game as the U.S. Juniors going on. Now I'm going to the big leagues to get your take on the fact that we have the Olympics just a couple weeks after the Open. And I think a lot of fans maybe are not understanding, you know, what this could mean for the Player of the Year Award and how much international talent John Rahm, Ludvig Åberg is going to be at La National. How excited are you, you know, from the perspective of, you know, headlines and you know, just watching the Olympics, how excited are you for the third edition of Olympic golf in the modern era?
You know, it's such a fun thing. It was one of the things that Brindley just said was that, you know, the reason that the best player doesn't always win in amateur events is in the junior amateur or the amateur is because it's match play instead of stroke play. And the reason the Olympics are so interesting is it's not a traditional event. Yes, it's a 72-hole stroke play event, so that is standard. But the emotions and the pageantry that surrounds this thing, it's not just going from tour stop to tour stop. And for me, that makes this so interesting to see, like, for example, Shane Lowry and the emotion that he had waving his flag for his country and talking about what a dramatic this thing this was for him. This isn't just, hey, I'm going out to play the 3M or the John Deere. They're great events, but it's just weekly kind of the grind that is PGA Tour life. This just adds a whole new dynamic. And so it makes it fun to see how players handle this and how they'll handle it under the pressure of not just playing for themselves, but playing for their country in most cases.
This is Tim Schmidt of USA Today and Golf Week joining us on ESPN 97.5 Houston. Tim, we just saw Americans sweep the majors for the first time since 1982. How convinced are you that the gold medal next week is going to come down to world number one Scottie Scheffler versus world number two Xander Schauffele?
Okay, so that's a great point, and I know people are very high on Xander right now, and obviously he has everything checking his boxes. He's been playing the best golf. He's won the Olympics before. He's got two majors under his belt this year. Man, it's still for me, and I know he hasn't played his best golf in the last while. Until something changes dramatically, it's still Scottie Scheffler versus the field. There's no Xander in this. There's no 1A and 1B. It's still 1A is right now Scottie Scheffler in the golf world. Does that mean that other players aren't involved? Of course, there are a million variables that could come into play on this. But in my heart of hearts, the way that over the last two or three years, Scottie Scheffler has kind of, you know, put his nose to the grindstone and just done what he's wanted to do, not always, but in most cases, the consistency that he's shown, for me personally, that's the guy. It's still him versus the field in my eyes. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, Xander again playing such great golf right now. Rory is due. You look at Ludvig Åberg and what he's done. I mean, having John Rahm in this, there's so many great players that could be a part of it. But Scottie's the guy. If Scottie's game is on, I still feel like, you know, it's not Tiger right now, Will. We're not at that stage. But when Scottie's on and other players are on, Scottie wins. And that's something. There's something to be said for that right now.
And one other question as far as Americans sweeping the majors. What do you think that is going to do as far as continuing to grow the recreational game in the United States?
You know, we just had the most interesting thing as part of the USA Today network. I have an alert internally that anytime a golf story at any of our network properties pops up, so for example, the Corpus Christi Caller Times or whatever Gannett property, when something golf pops up, it sends me an alert right away. And there was a story written by the folks in Rockford, Illinois at the Rockford Register Star. And it was talking about how, you know, equipment sales have dropped a little bit, not crazy down, but they're back to normal. Other things have kind of come back to normal. But recreational golf is booming as high as it's ever been in heartland America, too, not just on the fringes. We're talking throughout the country. And I feel like as this kind of, you know, continues to boil, as Scottie and Xander and others in that genre are waving the American flag and making this an even bigger deal here domestically, man, it's just fun to watch. It's fun to be a part of, because if you would have told me, Will, I've taken over. I mean, you and I have been hanging out for years now, a few years, and I've been almost 5 years in this job at Golf Week. When I came in and it started to crest, the game I assume was going to do another, you know, up and then come back down. And to think about the fact that it hasn't come back down. Yes, we've lost a few municipal golf courses here and there. Most of that was infrastructure and other things that weren't maintained over the years. But for the most part, the level of play domestically is just as high as it's ever been. That is such a cool thing to be a part of. And yeah, golf's going to continue to keep growing, and having those guys waving that American flag and you know, wearing their cool American gear at these things is only going to help.
And Tim, I mean, with 2000, you know, with another Ryder Cup around the corner in 2025 at Bethpage, it just seems like this trend of not only great, you know, obviously the Europeans will be defending, but as far as major events that could continue to push the recreational game, I mean, I can't think of a better showdown than a Ryder Cup at Bethpage. I haven't gotten your take on Keegan Bradley being elected to captain the United States team. And Tim, at world number 19, I am not ruling out that Bradley could become the first playing captain since Arnold Palmer in 1962. What's your take there?
Yeah, that's a really great point. And what an interesting selection. Just something to stir up. You know, the American side definitely needed something. And I feel like the naming of him and the kind of the swirl that came after that, with people originally saying, what the heck? Is that really who they named? Well, internally, we knew this 2 days in advance. Eamon Lynch tipped me off. Wow. 2 days in advance that he was going to be selected. And we were going to try to run something. But as a staff, everybody inside said, no, that can't be right, right? No way. That can't really be who they're going to put in that position. Well, now the kind of second wave has been, man, this was probably a really good move. This is really something. This is obviously someone who's very passionate about playing for his country, and also someone who's younger and can connect. And by the way, although he's younger and can connect, he's not one of the, you know, the cool guys in the cool club. We needed someone outside the Jordan, Ricky, yeah. JT, you know, that has kind of controlled golf a little bit. Someone outside that to kind of say, okay, wait, hold on, let's add a little new perspective to this. So I think Keegan was an amazing selection, and I think it is very possible that he could be a playing captain. I will also tell you on a switch, one of my favorite things about this, Will, is I am very much, even though I get to go and hang out at the cool, upper tier clubs in this country, including places like Carlton Woods and Whispering Pines, yes, and these great spots that I've been able to go, I am at heart very much a fan of municipal golf and municipal golf courses and what they mean to this country. And the fact that we're playing at Bethpage, which is one of the most challenging. And by the way, Bethpage has other courses. The Bethpage Red course is amazing. The fact that we're playing this event at a public golf course, and, you know, at a time when kind of things have gotten a little, the game is starting to get a little highfalutin again, where it's a lot of like club redesigns with the same 10 designers in the world and, you know, that kind of stuff. To see it back with the eyes of the golf world on a municipal golf course makes me so happy. By the way, one of only a handful that's used, another one, of course, Memorial Park, which is such a great and positive story in Houston. So I just love the fact that not only is it a cool new wrinkle with perhaps Keegan playing, but we're going back to a municipal golf course right outside a major metro center.
It's too bad the U.S. Open can't come to Texas because Memorial Park did a great job with that golf course this year, and certainly some murmurs from the players that it was comparable to a U.S. Open venue. Tim, unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to talk to you for another hour. I appreciate your insight on the Olympics and some other topics as far as the world of golf, as always.
Always good to chat, Will, anytime.
That is Tim Schmidt of USA Today, and we are wrapping up shop here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. Listen, as far as a live bet for the 3M, I like Johnny Vegas at 18-1, you know, four back of Taylor Pendrith. Johnny played well in Detroit, played well at the John Deere. I think he is ready to go, open 68-66. This is a perfect course fit for him. I like Johnny Vegas at 18-1 rolling into the weekend 3M Open. That'll do it here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. I'm Brian Sparity. We'll talk with you next Saturday. Have the great golf doctor back in studio. See ya.
Loaded, ready, rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.